Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour we will be discussing this week's SmackDown, as well as a little bit of NXT, which debuted, of course, on USA Network this Wednesday at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A lot to get to, so let's get right to it. And let's start with NXT. NXT made its big debut on the USA Network. And, of course, we saw the Velveteen Dream and Roderick Strong. A surprise, really. I think it was a surprise. And a lot of people are saying, well, this could point to the Velveteen Dream being called up to either Raw or SmackDown. We'll see. We'll see. At this point, let me just analyze NXT by saying this. In the future, we'll be doing match-by-match analysis. We're not going to do it today. But the overall feel that I've got from fans who watched it was that if you were an NXT fan going into this, you loved it. It was no frills. They cut right to the chase. It was action, action, action. It was fast-paced. It was everything that NXT fans come to expect from that product. They didn't change anything, really. If you were not an NXT fan or you did not know of NXT, which several people who wrote to me did not, they were confused. A lot of the people they didn't know, a lot of the people, they weren't aware who's the heel, who's the face, what's the story. Nothing. There was no effort made by the WWE, and I really thought there might be, to at least encapsulate in some small way who's who, what's what, for the novice who just tuned into NXT this Wednesday and had never seen the product before. I was surprised they didn't. Now, I know in their world, everyone knows who these guys are. Everyone is well aware of the storylines. Here's the thing that bothers me. The WWE does it on a consistent basis. They show you what you just saw. They come back from a commercial break and it's, here's what you just saw. Here's what you saw last week on Raw. Here's what happened. Here's what went down with Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan for the millionth time. Just in case you might happen to be a new viewer. And you did none of that with NXT. None of it. Or very little. So I'm surprised. Yes, I'm very surprised. And I don't think it was a wise decision, quite frankly. Now, I know what they're hoping is that, well, people will just pick right up on it. The NXT fans don't want to see that BS because then they're going to say, oh, it's just like the WWE. They're going to repeat a million of all these things. Well, yes. But for the initial episode, it would have been great if you just sort of helped to work the new fan into it. Because a few of the fans who watched it said, I like the matches, but I'm lost. I don't know if I'll tune in again because I don't know who these people are. I don't know, you know. And that's not good. So my advice to them is watch it a few weeks. You'll pick up on it. But what WWE should do is they should take at least the first couple minutes of each match for the first few weeks and at least let the fans catch up on what's going on. The non-fans, the fans who don't know who NXT is, because if you don't, they don't know what the situation is. They don't know who Undisputed Era is. So it made no difference that they got their prophecy came true because people are like, well, who are they? Just a little 30-second encapsulation of it wouldn't hurt. And I think NXT fans would be forgiving. And you could even have the announcer say, for the benefit of the people who don't regularly tune into our show that was on the WWE network, And I think that NXT faithful would be a little bit forgiving of that for the first month. Having said that, it was an excellent show. The 2 hours flew by very quickly. And I think that the WWE has a real chance at recruiting fans that might normally have went to the AEW. Again, not everyone who would be interested in NXT is going to have the network. So the replay may mean not that much to them. They can't get it anyway. So we'll see what happens. The ratings right now are not important. The ratings will be important when AEW debuts, and then we can compare them side by side and say for the next couple of weeks, here's what NXT did. As soon as AEW joined the fray, then let's see what NXT does, and we can talk about that from there. Overall, though, I think it was a very good show. I think that fans were surprised, at least the ones I talked to who didn't really have any knowledge of NXT said it doesn't feel like a WWE brand. They've done a very good job of separating that. They really have. The only issue I can see is that you're going to get those people who say, how come these people who are supposed to be, triple A compared to the big leagues, how come they seem like they're better? How come they seem like they're better wrestlers? How come the action is better? How come the matches are better? I thought this was, I thought the WWE's Raw and SmackDown, that was the major leagues. How come these guys are better? Well, this is the problem that I said was going to occur. The answer is it's just a different product. It's a different style. Depends on what you like. But NXT, regardless of what they say, are going to have to try to reach a more mainstream audience. And that means they're going to have to create some characters and flesh out some characters that people know and that people relate to. Otherwise, it just becomes a wrestling show with good wrestling. Don't assume that every single person who tuned into the USA Network to watch that event already watched NXT many, many times and knows every storyline, every character, every nuance of every little thing that's happening, because they do not. As evidenced by my mailbag of people who I would say it was running about 75-25 of people saying good things. The only negative things I really got were people saying, I liked the action, but I felt lost. I didn't know these people. So I'm watching them and I don't really have any active interest in it because I'm like, well, I don't know who they are. WWE, you can do something about that. And the answer is flesh it out a little bit. You had a couple of warm-up weeks before AEW comes along. Use that to grab your fan base. Use that to get the new fans in. AEW is going to have to do the same thing. Of course, they're going to have to do the same thing. Not everybody that is going to tune in there has watched their pay-per-views and knows exactly what the storylines or the feuds or the people even are. They're going to have to do that too. So right now I have to say that NXT failed at that because of their arrogance to assume that everyone already knows. And we'll see if AEW does. So did you catch the show, Todd? And if you did, what did you think of it overall?
It was a pretty good show. I watched it. Like I said a while back, I watched some of their events on the WWE Network the night before, like the actual WWE pay-per-views. The Velveteen Dream match and
Roderick Strong
match was a pretty good match at the end.
Yeah, look, I think they did a good job. It's just that, again, Mike, I really feel like they should have taken that initial episode and rather than to pack as many matches as they could in and as many big spots as they could in, at least give the fans who weren't used to NXT a little background story of who the people are and what's going on.
You're right. And that's the thing. And especially with the fact that who are these Europeans coming over? Who's this group of Imperium? You know. Well, I know you and I and Todd and others know who they are. If you watch NXT UK, we know. Just the normal fans, just the casual fans who don't have the network aren't going to know who they are.
It's very true, and that's my point. They've taken it. It's almost like somebody walked into the middle of a movie and sat down. And now they're saying, who's that guy? Why is he mad at this person? Who's these people chasing them? What are they trying to get away for? It's going to take some effort for these fans to catch up. And some of these fans will. And some of them will say, I'll just watch the Raw and SmackDown. So if you are one of those fans that really don't know a lot about the NXT, I encourage you to at least watch it for a few weeks and see if they'll catch you up on what's happening. If not, I think you'll catch up to speed pretty quick. They didn't waste a lot of time with interviews and backstage stuff and whatever. They went strictly for the action. But I think eventually they'll weave some of that in there, and I think you'll appreciate it a little bit more. I guess I was in the same boat as the WWE. I was a little bit stunned when fans were saying, okay, the Roderick Strong match with that guy, the Velveteen Dream, those two guys are really, really good, but I couldn't get into it. And I'm like, how can you not get into that? And then I realized it's because you don't even know who they are. To you, it's just two guys. It may as well be Mr. X and Mr. Y. And then I began to realize, gee, that was a mistake. You need to catch the fans up to speed at least a little bit, Tom. Hello, Tom. Are you there? No, Tom is not there. Anyway, so that's our NXT review. NXT did a very good job. All of my fears were quelled because I thought they were going to totally change for the network. They didn't change. They didn't change much at all. It's virtually identical. Virtually identical. That's good news. The bad news is if you want to catch the new fans, you got to catch them up on who these people are. You just got to. Anyway, let's go to SmackDown. A lot to talk about. We start right out, of course, with the New Day, and they're going to take on the Revival and Randy Orton. And I was not too psyched with this. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought that the Revival and the New Day match at Clash of Champions was pretty poor. And, to be perfectly honest, I thought the Kofi Kingston match with Randy Orton was fair at best. Fair at best. But to my surprise, this was a very, very good match. There is no question in my mind that the New Day function better when there's all three of them in the ring. And the Revival function better in those situations where there's going to be a lot of time and in and outs and teamwork and all that kind of stuff. Even Randy Orton does, because he doesn't have to carry the whole match himself. And this was an excellent match. As a matter of fact, I was surprised at how good the match was. New Day wins. I would assume that would eliminate Randy Orton from any major contention. But if that didn't, certainly what followed did. And what followed is Brock Lesnar's music and Brock Lesnar coming out and challenging Kofi Kingston to a match at Hell in a Cell. Now, I have to tell you that I know a lot of fans were saying, oh, Jesus, no. Not Brock Lesnar. Here we go. Oh, my God. Do we have to suffer through this now? It's bad enough. He infected Raw forever. Now it's going to be the same damn thing on SmackDown. And I feel your pain. But for whatever reason, this really worked for me. Just seeing Brock Lesnar and Kofi Kingston, I immediately felt like, oh, come on, Kofi's got to pull this out. And that's just raw emotion. And I'm saying to myself, gee, they really got me here, because the way they have booked Lesnar over the years, even losing a couple times to Seth Rollins, Kofi Kingston is way over his head. Way, 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 way over his head. And for that reason, he becomes extremely rootable. You don't want Lesnar in that championship position. Kofi's a likable enough guy. He's in way, 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 way over his head. No one's giving him a chance to win. And for whatever reason, that works and makes this a match that you say, man, I want to see it. Maybe, maybe, maybe against my better judgment, just maybe he'll pull it out. That's what wrestling's kind of all about. I feel emotionally invested now in this match. I want Kofi to win. I don't think he's going to win, but I want him to win. And for whatever reason, even though my mind is saying, look, Fox wants Brock Lesnar as champion, we get it. Fox wants Lesnar on the not only the initial show, but they want to be able to tout him as a champ. I get all that. But there's still that little tiny part of me, that shred of doubt that says, yeah, but he wouldn't show up anyway. Fox don't want a guy who won't show up. They don't want to be, they want to be able to defend the belt on the show, and Lesnar won't defend the belt on the show. So maybe Lesnar will just make occasional appearances. Maybe Kofi will pull this out somehow. And it will be big news for Fox. So there's that little tiny part of me that is unsure. And because of that, this worked very well. Very well. Brock Lesnar extending his hand and then F5-ing Kofi Kingston, making it look like this is not going to be a tough night for Brock Lesnar. Everything that happened, both in that match and afterwards, even with Brock Lesnar, worked for me, Mike.
It worked for me, too. And, you know, we knew this was because they wanted, of course, Fox and Brock Lesnar on SmackDown. That's why they wanted him. You know, so we know it was just a matter of time before he makes his first appearance on SmackDown. And look, you're right. And look, it's going to be one of these things. To a lesser extent, it was that type of thing with we knew AJ wasn't winning, but he gave him a good match. You know, whereas this is, and you could absolutely in that particular match do the same thing you did with AJ Styles. In fact, that's the type of wrestler Kofi is. He's a speed, quickness guy that can give Lesnar that type of match, you know?
Yeah, and again, look, fans are very quick to say, well, it's just going to be Lesnar's going to win because, of course, Lesnar's going to win. He's going to win because Fox wants him as champion. That sounds reasonable. And it sounds right. But I'm not convinced yet. There's still a part of me that says Fox wants a champion that's going to be on the show weekly, and that's not going to be Lesnar. They still have Lesnar. He can still show up whenever. So having him as champion and then not having any championship defenses on their show doesn't sound like something Fox would be into. So there's still a part of me that says Kofi's going to pull this out somehow. And because of that, because I don't know, and I'm very unsure about what this outcome could be, I'm really looking forward to this. So this worked 100% for me, Todd. How about you?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, I don't want to see Lesnar as champion. If he comes champion, he's going to keep that belt hostage for months at a time like he did with the Universal belt and show up whenever he feels like showing up.
And I don't think Fox wants that either. So one of two things has happened. Either Lesnar has agreed to be much more front and center for the next how long, or he's not going to win. Because I know that Fox wants a champion that's front and center. I know they also want big names, but they already have Lesnar as a big name then. They could still put Lesnar on all of their packaging, all of their whatever for their show, saying Brock Lesnar's a part of SmackDown. That's fine. Doesn't mean he's there every week. So let's go to the next thing, which is Eric Rowan sits down with Michael Cole. This was a mistake. a complete and utter mistake. Because not only did it minimize, and later on they, we'll get to it, later on they certainly rehabbed it, but at the moment it was happening, I'm saying you're destroying Eric Rowan. You are literally destroying Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan looked bug-eyed crazy when last I saw him. And now he's sitting down saying, I feel disrespected. I don't feel like I feel underappreciated. I'm not going to allow anyone to tell me what to do again. And I'm saying, well, this doesn't sound like a heel. That's number one. Number two, it's minimizing his villainous potential as just this crazed brute of a man. And number three, he's not very good at it. So when you have a guy sit down for a 3 or 4 minute interview who's not very good on the mic, this is what you get. Total mistake. Absolute 100% total mistake. I did not come out of this. Number one, he said nothing different. There was nothing learned. There was nothing added to the storyline. Nothing at all. It was just verbatim stuff we've heard before. So I'm not sure why they thought it was necessary to do that. What's your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. This is one of these things that I don't get. You know, these guys both are, now. Maybe his partner less than him, because I think Harper can speak a little bit better. But these two guys should be the quiet types. These two guys should be exactly what they were when Harper come back, you know, that force of nature.
I agree. It just seemed to minimize the whole thing for me. And by the way, he never gave a coherent answer to why you would target Roman Reigns to begin with. So, yeah, look, it was what it was. Wasn't very good. Shinsuke Nakamura then. First, of course, Sami Zayn comes out, and Shinsuke Nakamura to take on Ali. This was not a match. It wasn't supposed to be a match. The second the bell rang, Sami Zayn provides distraction, if flat out holding the leg of Ali, and then Nakamura with the Kinshasa, and that's it. Very easy, 1, 2, 3. This was used as a distraction for Kevin Owens entering the arena, taking a seat, presumably with a ticket that he bought, because Shane McMahon was coming out to address why he fired Kevin Owens. As he's leaving, he's served with papers. Now, I'm saying to myself, please, please, please let this be. Papers from Eric Bischoff. Papers from Vince McMahon himself. Please don't let it be Kevin Owen. Please, please, please don't let it be Kevin Owen. Nope, it's Kevin Owen. Shane McMahon gets in the ring and says, well, on my way out here, I was served with these papers. I haven't really had the time to really look at them good, but I've glanced at them. And Kevin, you obviously have a problem. So come on down here and get in the ring. Security, let him in the ring. And we're going to address this face to face. This is an awful, awful mistake. And here's why. Have we now become, as wrestling fans, so jaded that our heroes now don't fight their battles, they litigate them? Well, I can't do anything about it in the ring, so I've served you with papers. You're going to court. I'm suing you for $25 million. That's a hero? That's who we want to get behind. Good for Kevin Owens. Yay, he's suing Shane McMahon. Yay. Wow, that's awful. I mean, that is awful. How in the world does this make Kevin Owens, in any way, shape, or form, someone we're supposed to root for? And then, to add insult to injury, the tagline of this whole thing is, not only do I win my $25 million when I win this lawsuit? But I get to stand in this ring and tell you you're fired. Well, what lawsuit is that? What lawsuit would give Kevin Owens the right to fire someone when he's just a worker? I've never heard of such a lawsuit. So if I'm wrongfully dismissed from my job, I not only win my money, but I get to fire the person who wrongfully dismissed me. Since when? So the whole thing doesn't even make any sense. Shane McMahon, rumors are, is leaving the WWE for a while. So they're going to try to tie this in. I don't see a connection. I don't understand how you're going to do it and make it even look reasonably real. And I don't know how Kevin Owens is going to come back from this. How do you get in the ring now and say, well, now that I've sued and I've won and I've rid the world of Shane McMahon, not through any of my heroic actions, but by litigation. Not through fighting his lackeys. Not through breaking him down. Not through literally beating his ass, but just suing him and winning. I'm a hero. What? I don't know who the hell is writing this for Kevin Owens, but I am telling you, it is totally destroying his character. He's wearing a t-shirt that says fight anyone or fight Owens fight. Fight what in court? I mean, that's just terrible. That's inexcusably terrible. You're going to get the little pop from the audience of, oh, yay, Shane's getting yelled at. But in reality, fans are walking out of there going, what the fuck? Kevin Owens is suing him, and then he's going to fire him, and I guess he's going to come back, and how does that, what? Why doesn't he just fight him? Why isn't there some kind of a match with something on the line? Or, you know, that's the way wrestling is supposed to be. So what now? What are we going to get now? Well, I'm suing you because you ran down and hit me with a chair when you were involved in the match. Therefore, you assaulted me, according to the law. You weren't in the match. You had no right to be down there. So I am suing for assault. Is that what wrestling's going to be now? This one flabbergasted me, Mike. I thought they couldn't destroy Kevin Owens' character anymore, and somebody said, hold my beer.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, we talk about the writing and the setup, you know, all the time for different things. I look at the two guys who supposedly took over creative or whatever, and I can say without a doubt that neither Bischoff nor Paul Heyman would have wrote this way. Neither one of them.
It's awful for a few reasons. He says, well, I decided I want to hurt you, and I want to hurt you where it hurts the worst, which is your wallet. Because if, of course, he sues for $25 million, that wouldn't just come out of corporate. None of this makes any sense at all. So Kevin Owens' claim to fame will be, I couldn't win a wrestling match, but I won a lawsuit. So cheer for me. Wow. You know, whoever's writing that, I have no words. There's nothing more to say. When it comes down to your heroes can't win wrestling matches, so they sue the people who are wrongfully keeping them down. Okay, well, then, let's start with how many people should be sued. The OC should be sued. They all gang jumped Seth Rollins. Sasha Banks should be sued. She gang jumped Natty. She jumped Natty anyway. Blindsided Natty. There was no match. There was no scheduled match, so Natty should just sue her, right? I'm suing you for assault. I mean, this isn't right in any planet. This is just dumb. And it hurts even worse when it's a guy like Kevin Owens who can really deliver. Even Kevin Owens can't save this. Because it's awful. Todd, what's your thoughts about the Kevin Owens situation?
I think it was stupid. I think it's a stupid angle right there. Whoever wrote that should be fired. I remember back in the day with the Austin and McMahon feud with Vince. Stone Cold Steve Austin didn't bring no lawyers or in it or anything like that. He just went after Vince, get him back for what? If Austin loses his matches, he goes after Vince or after the person in the ring.
See, that's if Shane McMahon had sued Kevin Owens, saying I'm suing you for assault because you did this to me in the parking lot or whatever, then you'd say, oh, well, that makes sense. Shane McMahon is afraid of Kevin Owens. He knows he can't really beat him up. Kevin Owens kicked his ass in the parking lot, and now Shane McMahon's going to try to instigate some kind of lawsuit so that Kevin Owens is financially crippled. At the same time, that'll make sure Owens will never do it again. It makes sense if Shane was to do it. It just makes Kevin Owens look like a guy who couldn't get over on Shane so in the ring, so he's just going to get over on him in a courtroom, and that's terrible. Anyway, Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks should have been a much, much, much better match, but it was really not even meant to be. It was just a setup for Bayley to come down, and then, of course, Carmella, which I'm glad to see they're going to use Carmella again. I imagine we're staring down the barrel of Carmella and Charlotte versus Bayley and Sasha next week. That's my assumption. And who knows? Maybe even Carmella will be added to the mix of top contenders for Bayley's title, which is fine. Anytime you're going to add another woman to the mix and make her relevant in this federation where there's only three or four that are, I'm all for it. So even though I was a little disappointed in the match not being what I thought it could be, if this is your vehicle to help springboard Carmella a little bit and get her front and center again, I guess I'm okay with it, Mike.
Yeah, and the most important thing this could do is separate her from, the 24/7. And they do a good job together, but she's better than that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know how long it'll last. I hope it'll last. You know, I hope they cycle Carmella back up toward the top of the women's division. She doesn't have to be the champion, but it'd be great if she was considered in the same breath as Bayley and Charlotte Flair and Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and those. You know, we need a few more relevant women, and this will help. So even though the match was a little bit of a disappointment, I didn't hate it. Then comes the coronation of Baron Corbin. I don't care what anybody says, Baron Corbin's doing a pretty damn good job lately of being a heel. Because there is a handful of people, a handful, who could pull off this hokey King of the Ring thing and not make it look really, 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 really cheesy. And he's one of them. Because in your heart of hearts, this character that he's portraying, you really feel like, well, he would want this crown. He would want this robe. 90% of the people you'd say, oh, they cheesy ass crown. They're not going to want it. They're not going to want to wear a robe. That's so passe. That's so 1980s. It's so dumb. But for some reason with Corbin, his character, you can literally say, yeah, I can see this. I can see him wanting to wear the whole thing, call himself the king, the whole nine yards. I could see it. So hats off to Baron Corbin, who's not the world's greatest wrestler, but he's really becoming at least a really good heel. There were reports he got actual death threats. And I'm not talking about, you know, cheesy ass, oh, I wish you'd die. I'm talking about death threats. If you're getting actual death threats, you're probably doing something right. So good for him. Good for him. But better for Chad Gable. I don't know where they've been hiding Chad Gable, and I don't know if lightning struck his head, but Chad Gable is starting to crank on all cylinders. He's great in the ring. He has, as we've talked about before, magnificent facial expressions. You can feel what Chad Gable is feeling or thinking just by looking at the expression on his face. And he comes across as a guy who is quiet and unassuming and likable, but he does have that point where if you push him too far, he's going to snap on you and he's going to shoot on you. And that's what it looked like he did to Baron Corbin. He didn't bring in a chair. He didn't do whatever. He just shot on him, really. Down went the whole throne. He stepped on the crown. He ripped up the robe, which, again, it was important that we thought it meant something to Corbin, and it felt like it did. Anybody else who won that, it wouldn't have felt that way. And it solidified one thing. They're not done with Chad Gable. I was a little bit worried when Gable lost. I'm like, oh, boy. They just used him as a sacrificial lamb, and now he's not going to see him again for a while. I think maybe they're ready to pull the trigger on doing something a little bigger with Gable, and this is a good thing. He's very small and he's very light. I usually don't like that, fighting guys the size of Baron Corbin and stuff. But he's got some legit cred as a wrestler. He is a lot stronger than people think. He tosses big guys around pretty easy. And he does have that charisma without having to even really use the mic. He didn't say anything, Mike, and we still understood how he felt.
Right. You know, I don't want to make comparisons, but he reminds me of what Ziggler was before Ziggler became the show off. You know, Ziggler had those same facial expressions. Yeah, he was a great wrestler, but before he became the 215-20-pound guy that he is, he was a smaller guy, a much smaller guy. And you know, he maybe not as strong as Gable is, but this is the exact same kind of guy. You know, you got the feeling that if you pissed him off at the time, Ziggler would shoot on somebody like Gable, which he did shoot. So, yeah, I like how we thought back 6-8 months, a year ago, when they first split him off of that tag team and they were starting to push him a little bit, that he was going to start, that they had something big back then as well. So, yeah.
Now that we got to try to, you know, suspend our disbelief when he was a heel and it was with Robert Roode, but we can maybe do that. The bottom line of the situation is this. I said to myself, is there anyone except right now Chad Gable who I would have watched destroy Baron Corbin's coronation that would be more satisfying? And I said, no, not really. That's the guy you wanted to see do it. I looked back and said, well, if Roman Reigns came down and beat him up, if, Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins, any of the top guys, no. It, for some reason, it works for Chad Gable. If the WWE does not blow this, I think they got something with Chad Gable. I really do. Because fans appreciate and respect his ability in the ring. And he's really, really good at selling his emotions outside of the ring. And he seems like a likable enough guy that the fans will support him. So tentatively, the WWE blows everything. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt. But tentatively, you could have something good with Chad Gable if you really, really bear down and do it right. So I was happy to see it, Todd. I thought it came out very well.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was pretty cool when Chad Gable came down to smash the royal chair, the scepter, squash the crown, the part mannequin who was holding the royal cape and ripped it apart. It was pretty cool on that.
You know, the thing is, he has the look on his face of the guy who finally punches the bully in the nose. And that is, it's a tried and true storyline that always works. It always works. It'll work for 100 more years. There's a bully. There's a guy who really doesn't want to fight. Eventually he snaps, takes him out. That's Chad Gable. it's always going to work. It's the most basic plot line in the world, but it always works. And Chad Gable's the perfect guy because he always looks like – Chad Gable's not afraid to show ass. This is another thing. You know, if you go up to these wrestlers and say, you're this and you're no good and you're whatever, these guys are like, oh, yeah? I'll kick your ass. You know what I mean? That's how they are. Chad Gable is one of the only guys back there that just kind of puts his head down like, here we go again. I'm going to have to deal with these idiots. I know I'm short. I know I'm not on TV a lot. I know I haven't won anything. I get it. It works. It works because he's not a loud mouth. It works because he's not the guy that snaps back or has the one-liners, Mike.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, look, you know, you've talked about the Charlie Brown comparison a few times, and there's one particular cartoon where what happened was Charlie Brown finally gets to kick the football, but how does he get to kick the football? Because somewhere along the line in the cartoon, he got turned invisible. And she didn't know it was coming. And Lucy didn't know it was coming. That's Chad Gable. You know, you get the feeling that something's going to happen that's going to piss him off so much that he's just going to cut loose on somebody, you know?
Yeah, and again, with the Charlie Brown comparison, you know, if you followed the Peanuts thing for your whole life, just one time, you would have loved it if Charlie Brown hit a home run or Charlie Brown won a ball game, and it never really happened, but you're always saying it could. The moment when it does in professional wrestling, that's the Charlie Brown succeeds moment, and that's what they're doing with Chad Gable, and I'm telling you, this could work. He could be like that Daniel Bryan type. He really could be. Anyway, Heavy Machinery come out with their new look, which is Otis basically doesn't have a onesie thing anymore, singlet, and wow, man, you know. Hide the kids. But the thing is, Otis is not afraid to just say, look, I'll do whatever. His partner, I got to tell you, I don't know. Heavy Machinery is not going to go anywhere, in my opinion. They're going to be around, and they're going to be popular, and maybe they'll get a two-month run with the belt somewhere down the line. But for the most part, they're going to be that team that everybody likes that come up a little short when the big players are in the ring. But Otis has that charisma that he could do something. I'm not 100% sure. I'm never too big on separating tag teams, but you might think about it down the road. After you've utilized them the way that you feel you have to, you might want to think about letting Otis have a little bit of a solo run. Because the other guy's a really good wrestler, but he's not very charismatic. And Otis is just overshadowing him every way, shape, and form, Mike.
He really is. And maybe what it takes is, you know, for them to split. Because remember, when Jordan and Gable were together, they were, you know, average at best. Yeah, they put the tag team champions around them, but it didn't stay around them. And now we're seeing what Gable can do, you know, can really do. That's Otis Dojovic. Now, granted, Otis is a big guy, but he's kind of short. You know, he's one of these shorter big guys, if you get what I'm saying. You know, the other guy is more in line with what Vince would like. Vince likes, you know, the other guy's what, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", whatever, and 300 pounds or whatever he is, but he's in more and more. But charisma-wise, Dojovic has got it, you know.
He really does. I mean, again, it's more of a comedy act, so I don't know how far that's going to go. But he still, there's something to be said about it. We then get to Daniel Bryan, who's going to come out and give his speech. I know a lot of people love this. A lot of people said it felt very real because the one thing he did do is he didn't go too far. He didn't come out and say, poor me. He came out and basically said, I'm not apologizing for anything I said or did in the past. But what I want to basically say is I never lied to you people. Whatever I said was the truth, at least as far as I'm concerned, it was. And when your best friend lies to you, somebody you really think is your best friend, you know, I don't understand why. I don't understand why he had to do this. Well, that's good. I didn't want Daniel Bryan to come out and be like, I've been an idiot for months and I shouldn't have said that. That was good. But their friendship was never really built up to the point where he should be this upset. In other words, we never saw them as like that we did with Kane. When Daniel Bryan and Kane were friends, we saw all these skits where Daniel Bryan was trying to get Kane to be a vegan and Kane was trying to get him to eat meat, and they were going to the psychiatrist together, and Kane was mad because he didn't invite him over for Thanksgiving. And we saw many, 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 many reasons to say these two guys are buddies. Reluctant buddies, but buddies. So when they did have that break, it felt real and it felt, oh wow, that's too bad. Same thing with Kevin Owens and Jericho. We got to see how close they were, so when the fallout came, it felt worse. We didn't get any of that with Rowan and Daniel Bryan. We didn't get any of that. So this didn't have the impact it should have had. And when Bryan says something like, there's nothing you could physically do to me that would hurt worse than you breaking up our friendship by lying to me, that doesn't work because we haven't seen them as that close. We're expected to believe they were that close, but you've given us no reason to actually have felt it. Well, next thing you know, of course, Luke Harper's in the ring and they're beating the hell out of Daniel Bryan, and down comes Roman Reigns to make the save. And I still say there is a very small, minute possibility that Daniel Bryan is masterminding this whole thing and he's behind it. I still say there's that possibility because I don't know where this is going. Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns against Rowan and Harper, and then what? What's next for Daniel Bryan? Because he's going to have to lose. Roman's not losing. So I still say there's a small chance that this is a big setup to do something horrible to Roman Reigns. Why? I don't know. Since they're tag team. They were tag team champions. They weren't all set upon, you know, just destroying one singular guy. Roman Reigns isn't in a tag team. So I'm not sure what any of this logic behind it is, but I still say there's a chance that Daniel Bryan's behind the whole thing. Because I don't know where it goes if he's not. It goes to one tag team match, maybe a Hell in a Cell, and then what? Because once again, Roman's already kind of lost. He won by disqualification, but he was the guy that was picking his ass up off the mat. Then I got to make him look weak again and lose. And they certainly don't want Rowan and Harper to lose their first big match. So it's going to be Daniel Bryan who takes it on the chin. And then what's next for Daniel Bryan? So we'll see where this goes. I give this it was okay. Again, they take Daniel Bryan and they're trying to make him a sympathetic character so that Roman Reigns will look good when he comes down and rescues him. This is the guy I've had trouble with, but I'm not going to watch him get beat up by these two idiots, and trying to make Roman Reigns look like the better man, so to speak. I sort of felt blasé about it just because the key element of the friendship between Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan was never portrayed to the point where I believed it. We were told they were friends. We were told they were intellectual equals. We were told they were whatever, but we weren't shown it. And because we weren't shown it, the impact when they broke off, just it wasn't there for me, Mike.
It really wasn't. And that's the thing. And we possibly know where after this where Rowan and Harper may be headed, and it's probably maybe that's to a reformation of the Wyatt family. So again, that's another reason why this leaves Daniel Bryan going where, and also the fact that there are rumors that Daniel Bryan may very well be headed to NXT.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, if that's the case, I guess I could have Daniel Bryan take one on the chin and then just move. There's some options. The problem is the story is convoluted. We don't know why Rowan would want to target just Roman Reigns. If Roman was the champion, makes sense. He's not, so I don't know why he'd want to target just Roman Reigns. I don't know why Daniel Bryan would be this upset when they weren't friends for very long. And it just has that feel of this is a story that wasn't fleshed out well at all. And so I'm not buying everything that they're putting into it, unfortunately. I'd like to, but I'm not. So running through the SmackDown, I can tell you this. The Brock Lesnar moment was excellent. I really felt somewhat sorry for Kofi Kingston. I really did. My first reaction was, damn, man, that's the end of Kofi's reign, and that sucks. And that's heat. That's heat for Lesnar. So I have to say that was very successful. The coronation with Baron Corbin and the Chad Gable interrupting it and going off on him, I thought that was very, very entertaining and very successful. I'm glad to see they're putting Carmella back into the mix. I hope that sticks. So I thought that was pretty successful. The Kevin Owens thing was a blatant disaster. It was so bad it almost ruined the entire episode. I was screaming at the TV. I really was, because I just don't understand. This is your hero? I'm suing you. Like some kind of, 118-pound lawyer in a three-piece suit saying, I'm going to sue you because you were mean to me. That's a hero? Jesus, that's just terrible. Whoever had the bright idea to have Eric Rowan sit down for a one-on-one with Michael Cole should rethink next time. That was horrendous. But overall, I enjoyed the episode. So despite the fact that I think they've destroyed Kevin Owens, I'm not even interested in Kevin Owens anymore. And I used to be a big Kevin Owens fan. I'm not interested in any way, shape, or form in this. I'm still going to give it a B-. Because what was good was really good. And I haven't had that feeling for a while where I was really like, wow, I wonder what Kofi's going to do. When you totally suspend your disbelief, especially someone like me, you know how hard it is to get me to totally suspend my disbelief and I find myself saying, oh, no, Kofi's screwed, man. I hope he can pull this off. And I'm like, what the hell am I talking about? It's all scripted. When I can lose that mindset, you've done your job really well. It happened twice with me on SmackDown. It happened during the Baron Corbin debacle with the coronation, and it happened during Kofi Kingston and Brock Lesnar's part in the ring. That's good. That's real good. Because if you could do it to me, then other people who aren't as whatever and into the wrestling are probably furious. Baron Corbin getting death threats. So all in all, I have to say, it was a successful SmackDown. Not for Kevin Owens, it wasn't. But for everybody else. So I'm going to give it the B-. What are your thoughts, Mike?
I'm going to give it a little bit better and give it a B, because I think that I really do like the fact that, one, we did not see the 24/7 thing, and two, that they finally decided to kind of separate R-Truth and Carmella.
Yeah, let's hope they just don't waste Carmella now. Let's hope it's not a one and done. Todd, what's your thoughts?
I gotta give it a B-, too.
Okay, so we got Bs and B-. Look, that's not too bad. It's obvious that SmackDown is moving to become the top show. That's what Fox wants. That's what Fox is going to get. The consolation prize for USA is no, Raw is not going to be our franchise show anymore, but you also have NXT. So that's the consolation prize. This draft is going to prove me right. They're going to stockpile a lot of their top guys on SmackDown. Stockpile them. Wait and see. There's rumors that Vic Joseph and I can't even think of the guy's name. It's Dom, somebody who's going to be the Raw commentators. That's not an A-team. Or at least in the WWE's eyes, that's not an A-team. So they're going to kind of abandon Raw. Abandon ship. Raw's going to be their secondary show. SmackDown's going to be the franchise. NXT is going to be the growing upstart organization. And USA is going to be stuck with those. Not stuck with them because they're going to do very well, but they're not going to get the top players. The wild card rule is over. They're going to get Becky Lynch. They're going to get Brock Lesnar. They got Roman Reigns. They're probably going to get Seth Rollins. Because if Becky Lynch is on SmackDown, I'm pretty sure Seth Rollins is following. So we'll see what ends up happening. It was an entertaining enough episode. Now, a lot of people have written us and said, what are you going to do when SmackDown moves to Friday? What's the Friday show going to be? Well, the Friday show is going to be an NXT wrap-up and review. And Sunday, we will dedicate the first half hour to talking a little bit about SmackDown and what's going on there as need be. If it's a very eventful SmackDown, we'll take longer. But the schedule will basically stay the same. Tuesday, we will have the Monday Night Raw report. Friday, we will have an NXT review. Sunday, we will have our regular show, which will encapsulate what happened on SmackDown. And that's the way it'll work, folks. So we'll see you Sunday. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.